Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about generation of light and Maxwell's equations. I'm still going to go into this because it's one thing which you really have to get down to and sort of work out the mechanics of it. And there's a lot of the process of these lay people coming in, trying to pick up and mimic, or parody, I suppose, actual scientists explaining things. And so at various points in time, we're told that light is generated when an atom jumps from one more orbital to another. So an atom, an electron, various points and things. And there's, if you do question your classroom teacher, they'll be either a little bit unhelpful, annoyed, or at least that's what I found. And so it's taken a long while for me to actually understand the real basis of these sorts of things. So essentially, free space is a waveguide for electromagnetic radiation. So unlike a vacuum, free space has properties which respond to the electromagnetic wave and hold it in, and it actually stores energy. So if I have a block of a cubic meter of space and there's so much light from it, I can actually sort of bundle it up for a period of time, the amount of light in there, and take it out as a number of joules, the amount of watts going into it. That energy, the energy from the sun, and that arrives on Earth, is actually stored in space, in space as, I suppose, light we would call it, but light is just distortion of space. So in order to make light, or to make any sort of wave, you need a power source, you need a wave generator, and something which couples the wave generator to whatever it's sending across. So it might be a string, it might be a bell, might be something like that. You've got to have something which actually couples that energy, oscillating energy, to the thing. And that's what we call is an antenna. An antenna is something which couples radiation to its to the impedance matches your source to space. So impedance matches it to actual space. So if something is really heavy or something like that, it will reflect it back. So if I have a radio wave and it's been generated in my mobile phone, it's going down a wave, it's produced by a little crystal, it's going down a waveguide, and it goes out and say you've broken off the antenna, it will just go to the end and it says, sorry, there's nothing there, and the thing at the opposite end will reflect the energy back. So everything that generates light has to have these features. It's got to have an energy source, a way of turning that energy source into a frequency, and that frequency is coupled to an antenna, and the antenna radiates out the energy. That sounds reasonable. So you need an antenna to transmit and receive energy from the vacuum, and the space. And the space is a waveguide, but it's got to carry the energy. So it's pretty amazing. It seems a fairly straightforward thing. It's like buying a sandwich at a shop. Someone's got to make the sandwich, sell the sandwich, transport the sandwich, give you the sandwich, and then you can eat the sandwich at the other end. But there's a whole series of processes where it hands over from the world of the atom to the world of space, and from the world of space to the world of the atom. Transfer of energy there. So we've got to actually work out physically what actually happens in the the coupling of space. And to be truthful, there are certain things I'm still struggling to understand, but things I definitely do understand up to a sufficient point to say that what you've probably been taught at school is garbage. Well, at least I can tell now. So basically, if I oscillate a charge, if I have a charge, and so this is a fundamental aspect to create light, I have to have a charge and I have to move it quickly. And if I move that charge in a without an antenna, it will radiate out into space. You can't help it. You know, the charge will produce an electric field into space, and it will produce a magnetic field. If I have a moving field, you can't help. You can call that ability to put out things into space as the inverse square law of that charge. If I move it, you can't help but get that information out there. But if I move it with an antenna, the antenna will couple the energy into space and actually slow the charge moving down. And so you can actually... I've been bitten alive by mosquitoes here. Blood oath. So this is Australia after the rains, and we've tried to cover up all the water. I'm sure we haven't everywhere. There must be some aspect of it. So a moving charge will always influence space. It's just the influence of space, whether it carries away energy and whether it impedes my oscillation. So there is a situation where I can oscillate charge, and that charge will have to do work to oscillate. There must be something that's happening. So that's the fundamental thing. To make any piece of light, I have to get a charge and I have to waggle it. Now, if you get any sort of charge and you waggle it, you will produce some degree of radiation into space. But that radiation will generally, if it's slow and poor enough, reflect back into it. But if it is resonantly coupled to space, it will be an antenna, and that energy will be pushed away. So if I move a charge, and it will influence the space around, but then the space will influence it back, and you won't lose any energy. But if it's coupled by an antenna, you move that charge around, that energy will go out into space and then continue to flow out into space. So how does that actually happen? Well, you've got to get back to a formulation of electromagnetic radiation. So James Clerk Maxwell in 1834 to 1898, some range around there, he wrote down a series of 20 equations. So he gathered all the equations that he could together, and it said, look, this makes a system of equations. And he produced in his lifetime 20 equations, and he worked on something. He didn't have a lot of differential calculus, and he worked with the best top theory of the time, which is hypercomplex numbers, something which is long lost to us. And this is a complex number which we know of is a x plus i y, the quaternion had x plus IY plus JXY W plus KZ. It had a few other things added into it. So they were fairly complex. And these were translated into, by, I think, Heaviside, into differential and integral forms of what we now know is the four Maxwell's equations. So Maxwell never published his own Maxwell's equations as we see it. And people have tried to reduce these equations down to a mathematical form and a useful form. So the useful form is the integral form, because we don't do anything differential. You do a little bit of differential stuff in quantum physics, but in practical circuits, it's the integral stuff. You you have a circuit. A circuit is a piece of wire, and the piece of wire integrates it. So it gives you your integral form and your differential form. And then there's the sort of measurement versions of it. So there's basically sort of a matrix of Maxwell's equations. So you've got Maxwell's original equations, which are 20 of them. Then there's a matrix of them, and the matrix of them are, is it an integral? That's where you sum it up, or differential, which is the integral for a tiny little bit, and a tiny little fragment, and if the fragment works together, you can sum them together, integrate them together. Now the two other versions is whether you work on potentials, and that's the great thing is that you can measure potentials directly with a voltmeter, or something called the magnetic field potential, which I don't know whether you can measure, but it's a very useful thing. That's called A, they're called potentials, or fields. Now, fields are a differential of potential. So, given that you can't, you can do a very small potential difference measurement. You can never actually get an infinitesimal field. You can measure, infer what a field is by doing a potential difference measurement. But the field is an intellectual construct, and it's an intellectual construct based on cultural view of some sort of force going through space. It's very a visual thing. So the fields are E and B. Now, so B is an experimental field, where H is a mathematical field. So let's talk about what a field is. A field is the values of something in an area of space. So I have a volume. A field is basically the Excel spreadsheet, the value of everything in one particular version. Now, people actually think fields have actual an ability. I can throw out a force field, put the force field on my spaceship, and basically it's, I don't know, like hurting someone with the, you know, stopping a dam breaking with the adjectives, the words. It's a sort of a confused confused way forward. So fields is very useful, but it's got to be taken with a grain of salt. Definitely field lines is a artistic construct, and fields and not necessarily the best way to handle things. Definitely Richard Feynman, famous physicist, I believe that you should go in potentials. I think at the end of the day, that's potentials, things that you can measure with a device, you know, one can do it, and there is advantages by sticking at this potential area. So we have this 4 2 by 2 matrix of expression of the Maxwell's equations, the differential or the integral version, and then the potential or the field version. So there's four versions of the four Maxwell's equations. Now the Maxwell's equations are simply two Gauss's laws. Gauss's law for charge and magnetic field. So Gauss's law for charge says that if I put a charge in, if I have a bag and I put charge in that bag, and I can count the number of field lines penetrating the bag that it's in, that will tell me how much charge it's in. So the grad or divergence of the amount of field lines produced around a charge. Now, field lines
it's sort of like this collapse thing. It's a way of visualizing Gauss's law, which is sort of, the visualization has got ahead of the mathematics, and so it actually stops people understanding that. So Gauss's law, for the first one, is Gauss's law of charge. If I put a bag around it, the amount of field lines going out of the bag will be proportional to the amount of charge in the bag. No matter how big the bag, if I get a huge bag and there's 10 lines coming out of it, if I get a much smaller line, there'll be those lines will still be coming out of that bag. Second, Gauss's law is for magnetism. And that simply states that if I have a magnet in the bag, the amount of lines coming out of the bag is equal to the amount of lines coming into the bag. So there's always zero net lines coming out of a bag. So the div B equals a zero. Now, just to stop at these types of things. The field lines, div E equals rho, the charge density, div B equals zero. It sort of says that there's no such thing as a magnetic dipole. If there are no monopoles, there can't be a dipole. There's a dipole field. A field is if there is a dipole, but there is actually no dipole. Getting into them. At this stage, there's the divergence one, but there's also the Laplacian, or the grad square of the potential. And so another way of stating that is a potential version is that the potential drops off as one on R. It's grad squared V equals rho, and then it's grad squared V, and it's actually grad squared A, or it's I suppose the del A, which is the magnetic potential. And the reason that you can do that is that if div B equals zero, and the divergence of a curl is defined of any function, if divergence of a curl of function A equals zero, then I can define it by div squared. Div squared A, A, all that states, therefore, is that there is some function A for which if I've got a field B that corresponds to the grad, B is the grad of some potential A. So V is the gradient of, the gradient of V is E, the grad of A is B. Just putting it across there. So just going through there. Then we have two laws of induction. And this is where it really comes into a lot. So a lot of people know Faraday's law, which is grad E equals dB dt. That's the differential form. That's where you take a tiny little unit and you say, what's the tiny little unit integral around this? A Stokes theorem, which says that the grad of a vector is the line integral of it. Then you've got the integral form of it, which is line integral of a loop of E equals the change minus this change of flux through that area. That's your practical transformer one. It's very hard to measure electric field, but you can stick a voltmeter in it and say, well, my voltmeter will measure a voltage in a loop by the change of flux. Or another way of saying Faraday's law is that a moving magnetic field, a changing flux, will create a circular electric field. So you've got two types of field lines now. So the first type of field lines is field lines which begin and end on a charge, so that's point-to-point field lines. Or you can have loop field lines, which is something which people don't really describe. It's a way of saying that if I have a grad of B, if I have a changing flux, the changing flux around that area which I cut through, I've got a field lines going through and I cut through that, and I just measure the change in there. That change in there will create an electric field line in a circle. Now, of course, if I put a wire in that circle, I can actually pick up that field line, and it means I can create a temporary electric field in a circle. It's a circle field line, and this is where a transformer operates. We just have a loop of wire around a changing magnetic field lines and pick up a battery. So that's Faraday's law of induction. Now, indeed, it's a law of induction. At the end of it, we don't actually, whether Maxwell had a deep insight into what was the mechanism that actually produced that is another thing. So if you imagine a magnetic field changing, creating a loop field line, he described it. Faraday measured it and declared it, but I don't think anyone has a real strong understanding for why that is produced. Now, this is something I want to understand myself. So that's third of Faraday's laws. Sorry, the third of Maxwell's equations, and that has, like anything, four formulations, but it's got a differential form. Now that's and then an integral form, which is the one that you actually practically measure. And the integral form is the integral form. So you have a grad E equals minus B dt, or the integral potential form, the EMF, of a loop of wire, the sum of the electric field potential of a loop of wire. So an integral of E is V. And so if I take from one point to another point in space and I sum the electric field down there, that will give me the potential. The EMF equals the minus the change in flux through that area. Just a little bit. So the flux is the area times B, and so that's one aspect of it. Another way of saying the next law is the grad of B equals J times dE dt, the flux through E of it. So the fourth law is Ampere's law, saying that Ampere's law and Maxwell's law of induction. So Maxwell's induction. So there's Faraday's induction for magnetic field. Magnetic field will induce a change in flux, and the magnetic field will induce a circular electric current. A change in flux of an electric field will induce a circular magnetic current. Now, a circular magnetic field line. Now, Ampere's law says that if I have a current, that current will produce a circular field line. You know, your Biot-Savart laws. So I have some wire, and there's current going in the wire, amount of the integral 2 pi r times the magnetic field line, which is the integral of B going around, will be equal to the current. Plus, that's Ampere's law, plus Maxwell's law, which is if I have a pair of capacitive plates, which is an important thing here, if I have a pair of capacitive plates and I have a change of electric field flux through it, that the magnetic field will go around. So what will happen, say if I have a circuit, a wire, with capacitor in the middle of it and a wire going out, and I let the capacitor charge up, as the current rushes in to the capacitor plates, I put a magnet around the outside, I will see a loop field there, but I'll also see a loop field in the gap between the two plates. There'll be a loop field in the gap between the two plates. In fact, that field will build up from the centre of the plate to the maximum, and the integral of that field will always be the same. There'll be a lower field further out, but the integral of the long field will be the same, also be equal to B. Now, so you have so the fourth equation is about the generation of an electric field, and so this gives you the things, the fundamental things of magnetic moment. So a magnetic moment is how powerful a magnet is, and how powerful a magnet is given by the line integral of I over over an area. So it's a magnetic moment which is in joules per coulomb, given out there, is equal to I times the area of your circuit coming across here, and that gives you your solenoid equations. So we have this thing that if I have a collapsing electric field, it will create a circular magnetic field. So if my electric field shrinks, as it shrinks, one of the things is that as it shrinks, it will actually cause the magnetic field to fire up and go around. So as it's shrinking, the faster it shrinks, the stronger it is. It's a differential effect. Now that, if you just take that, so if I have, if you can imagine an electric field as, say if I have an electron, I'll reduce it and it falls to the ground, it accelerates up as it's increasing speed across there, it will create that electric field dropping down. If I have my electric field suddenly drop down, it will create a circular field. So let's stop this for a moment. There are two types of field lines. There's field lines point to point, which are only electric field lines. Then there's also circular field lines. That is that go in a complete loop, and that they are from current or collapsing electric or magnetic field. So as your electric field collapses down in front of you, it swirls a magnetic field around the outside. That magnetic field swirling around is, as that builds up and changes down, it will create another electric field, which will tend to, in certain circumstances, to resist your electric field. So if I take I have the electric field dropping down in front of me, and if I take to my face, sort of in the plane of my hand out, pushing away from my hand, I can't quite describe it. If I take a cross section of that, I will have magnetic field lines which are going in a loop. And if I move off to, say, to the left of the field lines coming down, I take an area of space there, that will have an electric field circulating in it. And so what that means is my electric field in space will, as it drops down, will leak a distance out to the side, as it will generate a magnetic field line throughout all space outside. And it will also, that electric magnetic field line moving around as you get closer, will be a more intense pulsation. So as it speeds up, change of rate of flux of electric field, it will create a magnetic field out of phase, and then that magnetic field will create another loop. So what happens is your magnetic field radiation is a system of never-ending loops. So if I create an electric field down, I create a loop of magnetic field, that changing magnetic loop of magnetic field will create another loop around it of electric field, and that changing electric field will create a further magnetic field out to space. And what will happen is that the space will absorb the energy, store the energy, and that energy will go out to space and then be fed back into the system, which is your wave impedance. So if I put that limits, well, that's your speed of light of the electric field going in one direction. So you can only send signals down a line so much because of this. But this describes how the space moves out and stores the energy in. So, however, if you can resonantly oscillate that space, you can actually get a couple of your energy from where you're going in to the outside world, and will continue to propagate outside, and that's your electromagnetic radiation coming forward. So electromagnetic radiation is caused by loop fields. So if I have a central field and it collapses, it will create a loop of current, a ring of current, and as that ring of magnetic field, that ring of magnetic field will slow and speed up. As that slows and speeds up, that will create around that ring another ring of electric field. So that change in B to change to create an electric field is Faraday's law. Faraday's law of induction. There's Maxwell's law of induction. That is, a changing electric field will create a magnetic field, and so forth. It will produce across here. So that's your current wave. So essentially, a transformer is two things. You have to induce the magnetic field by Ampere's law. So you create the magnetic field by a changing magnetic field by Ampere's law. And that changing magnetic field then gets converted into a electric field by Faraday's law. So that's a Ampere's law. So I feed my current in by Ampere's law. It's changed to magnetism. From magnetism, it's changed back into electricity. That's your transformer. Now, if I do a system where I feed a create a magnetic field by changing an electric field, that's Ampere, that's Maxwell's law of induction, and then that magnetic field changes into an electric field, Faraday's law of induction. So basically, light is basically a free space transformer, which is exactly it. So a transformer converts electricity one end to the other. The same thing happens to us in space, in terms of the light gets generated in the sun, and then as an electric field collapses in the sun, an electric field gets excited in my eye. It's basically space is acting as the same sort of transformer, except rather than a core producing it, put core and wires producing it, I have free space electric and magnetic fields oscillating out, and it only oscillates at, works at a particular frequency. Oh, I'm going to have a few goes at trying to explain that, but I'll eventually go across. You can well imagine that the other explanations that you hear in schools are just eye-wateringly bad. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.